On the space show, we are back in New York for a public hearing of the Moon, Mars and Beyond Commission. One of the duties of the Commissioner's mandate was to establish how an economic base could be developed to support the President's vision of America's future in space. Well, okay, the President has since changed, but some of the issues are still relevant. In fact, it came as no surprise when the nine commissioners ran a public hearing under the banner Space Prosperity and Resource Development. Three financial wizards were invited to show their insight into how space investment could be leveraged to stimulate the economy and assist humanity's push to go to the Moon, Mars, and even beyond. We heard two of the witnesses in the episode 70 and 71 of our Moon Mars special. This evening we hear the third, who was introduced by Commission Chairman Pete Aldridge.
Asperity and competitiveness is one of the four major themes that we've been addressing. And we're pleased today to have three individuals who will shed some light on how space exploration can contribute to national prosperity and what specific models might be used to stimulate private investment. Miles Walton is a researcher at Morgan Stanley who covers the aerospace and defense sector. He holds a PhD in aerospace engineering from MIT, where he was a researcher in the Lean Aerospace Initiative, a consortium of industry, government, and academia aimed at improving the health of the aerospace industry. He is co-author of Lean Enterprise Value, Insights from the MIT Lean Aerospace Initiatives.
Great. Good morning, Chairman Aldridge, other members, distinguished members of the Commission. I want to thank you for this opportunity, which is very unique to testify before you today. I'm both personally excited and professionally intrigued in the President's vision for a renewed spirit of space exploration. Today I'll be talking with you from the context of a Morgan Stanley equity analyst covering aerospace and defense companies, and not from my space enthusiast hat with a PhD in aerospace engineering. So it may be a little sober. Before I start, consistent with U.S. regulatory disclosures, I have to say that Morgan Stanley has or intends to have investment banking relationships with all the aerospace companies I may mention, and a complete list of disclosures is provided at the end of the testimony. There are a few phrases which make an aerospace analyst's heart race or hair turn white, like the phrase commercial space. And so when speaking with members of your staff and hearing that they would like me to suggest business models in which commercial space is a viable, exciting business that sources of capital seek out and look to put their money into, I knew I had my work cut out for me. Investors' mental models of commercial space for the past 10 years have been imprinted with the difficulties of previous commercial space ventures: Iridium, Globalstar, New Skies, Astrolink, Loral Space, Intelsat, Inmarsat, Teledesic, Ellipso, Skybridge, just the ones that I could think of off the top of my head. And large space contractors have had their own problems making a business in commercial space. Boeing in 2003 took charges of $1.6 billion related to their space investments. Putting that in context, in the years 1998 to 2002, they reported a total profit of $1.2 billion, basically reversing their entire previous history. Likewise, Lockheed took charges relating to its space investments in 2002 and 2001, amounts of $940 million, $728 million, respectively. So you can see it's not a difficulty isolated to any single contractor. Therefore, a natural response of investors is one of great skepticism when it comes to investing in commercial space ventures. But for a minute, let's backtrack, describe fundamentally what investors are really looking for. They're largely indifferent to the investment vehicle they ride to make their money, whether it's software or space. At the very basic level, investors are willing to pay for three things: predictability, visibility, and profitability. Commercial space is unfortunately thus far lacking in most of these three traits. Profitability: companies' ability to exploit capital, make a profit, feed it into other ventures, and produce more profit, fueling growth. Most of the U.S. contractors have commercial space businesses which are actually drains of profits rather than sources. Predictability and returns goes to the level of risk associated with the investment. For example, the cyclicality of aerospace is one thing that can both play against the investor but also play to their advantage if they can time it accordingly. Although we continue to improve the reliability of space travel, its initial stages of a controlled explosion is not for the faint of heart. Furthermore, business models in space are notoriously hard to predict, i.e. the commercial mobile telecommunications business and the closely coupled tie commercial launcher business. And finally, three, visibility. Something investors are willing to pay for as it lowers the risk and increases the faith they can see in the future of an ongoing business. It allows the investor to have a long-term horizon and an investment perspective that can see progress all along the way. I don't mean to classify all investors alike. Some are more aggressive, others more risk-averse. Some longer horizons, some shorter. Some even invest in things they know have awful returns, but are overly infatuated with the product or the industry. Warren Buffett is one example whose infamous attraction to airlines, despite his repeated acknowledgement of it as a poor investment. So that's one thing space has going for it. Very, very interesting products. But that's not enough for the long term. By and large, for a large commercial endeavor to succeed, three characteristics must be in place: profitability, predictability, and visibility. So with regard to larger and some smaller contractor commercial space endeavors, we've yet to see a truly profitable growth story. One would think with the limitless expanse of potential opportunities, someone would have found the model, but a completely healthy value stream for commercial space is yet to materialize. Instead, what we have is a commercial satellite supplier base that is having trouble staying break-even, with five GEOSAT manufacturers competing for maybe 15 potential contracts a year, a commercial launch market with overcapacity and yet not enough readiness, and only a few niche but arguably profitable operator models that have gained credibility. So the financial reports are littered with failed commercial space ventures, and so it's not surprising that the capital markets are hesitant to put money into that area. So it's becoming harder and harder to convince those investors that allocation to this area is a good investment. Not that it's impossible, but it'll be a hard sell. So the question is, what elements of the vision for Moon, Mars, and beyond can be leveraged from commercial space funding from the capital markets? Placing purely commercial endeavors on the critical path would appear to me to be a mistake. We could find ourselves with, rather than an interstate highway system connecting the U.S., a series of interspersed toll roads connecting the U.S., which clearly wouldn't be as economically viable as we currently have today. I found myself wondering about the market tolerance. Sometimes only national imperative is enough to push through such odds. It strikes me that in this case, it is the case that only a national imperative will be enough. So government should continue to take the lead in both vision and funding. There are a couple potential emerging business parallels for use of commercial alongside national assets. One example is space imagery, where providers are supplementing an existing national asset base serving surge capacity, and clearly that's a service that has come into high value as of recently because of the ongoing conflicts. And meanwhile, it allows the commercial entity to continue to form its business case while it has not necessarily fully closed upon itself. Another positive influence is perhaps the XPRIZE. It provides a proving ground for concepts and a Darwinian survival of the fittest with a reasonable reward. Yet clearly $10 million is not enough for us to get back to the moon, and it's not even enough to buy you half a trip to the ISS. So parallel work is going to have to be going on at a national level at space transportation. But the XPRIZE, in concurrence, allows for valuable lessons learned and innovations to take place a priori before billions are invested by the national government. So in the end, there are certain areas where commercial-driven models just don't make a whole lot of sense, at least not right now, and space is perhaps one of those. In space, I see commercial following the government's lead, not the other way around. Yet there are technologies and processes that can be adopted from the commercial world, but space travel at this moment is very much a public good, not a profitable commodity. That being said, I think U.S. commissioners have the responsibility to recommend the insertion of policy hooks where it opens the door to future potential commercialization of space. I think the GPS is a good example where they put in and had the foresight to put in a military band and a civilian band, thus allowing the military capability while still allowing the commercial capability to exist. So my final words would be, one, look for commercial to help, but don't rely on it. Leave the door open for commercial to take up the flag in the future. And three, continue to encourage those emerging space enterprises with both financial and regulatory relief, as they'll likely serve as your source of innovation. Thank you.
That was Miles Walton, a researcher within the investment company Morgan Stanley, giving advice to the Moon, Mars and Beyond Commission on how to stimulate space prosperity and resource development. He was speaking in mid-2004. In today's changed economic climate, his comments are still relevant. On our next episode, the nine commissioners discuss these economic ideas with the three financiers. This has been episode 72 in our Space Show series covering the public hearings of the Commission. It is written by Andrew Rennie and drawing on audio provided by the Commission via the Space Show's very own Alan Walker.